So thank you all for being here again today, and we'll continue on this body of teachings of divine healing, body, heart, soul, which really is about balance, isn't it, and rhythm. So I'm going to read just one statement from last class, and then I've asked Rafika to offer the reading that she gave today at Universal Worship, because I think it is really a beautiful articulation in another language of what Murshid's teaching us. And that sentence that I want to repeat, or it's a few sentences, Murshid says, there are moments of intense feeling when pain and joy meet, and one cannot distinguish where one ends and the other begins. They have their meeting place in the heart of man. They have their meeting place in the heart of woman. They have their meeting place in the heart of humanity. Pain is like the herb in the hands of the great transmuter, the divine alchemist, falling on the melted silver of the heart, it turns it into the purest gold and renders the heart more fitting to be the altar of God. And the reading is from?
The Gospel of Buddha, which is compiled from ancient records.
By?
Paul Karras, okay. If that's how you say his name. Hmm.
Thank you.
Blessed is he who has found enlightenment. He conquers, although he may be wounded. He is glorious and happy, although he may suffer. He is strong, although he may break down under the burden of his work. He is immortal, although he may die. The essence of his being is purity and goodness. Blessed is she who has attained the sacred state of Buddhahood, for she is fit to work out the salvation of her fellow beings. The truth has taken its abode in her. Perfect wisdom illuminates her understanding, and righteousness ensouls the purpose of all her actions.
So yesterday was also in the teaching about how these great souls, through going on their own path, develop bearing witness to their own experiences, develop a kind of accommodation through which to guide and help and serve others. And that's what that sutra is saying, and I think very much so, don't you? So, let's have a little pop quiz. Any things that stood out for people yesterday that they'd like to, or that maybe you reflected upon that you'd like to bring up, or any questions or comments?
Just going deeper from revelations I had yesterday.
Good. Good. Praise God.
It was very meaningful, both of the wazifas that you led us in, but particularly the uplifter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did notice that, especially with Hakim, a lot of vibration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Aleem, too.
Yes, but it was even more so.
Both of them together, perhaps. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say with the practice, Rafi, by you mentioning the sound quality of that, what was really important for me was to kind of recognize the difference of the vibration of the fi short versus the fi. Mm-hmm. And so I never really thought about it so much in that way before, but noticing the ra and mm-hmm. the fi.
Yeah. It's like, yes.
When you said that we might notice some things start happening, and last night during the zikr, I've had this pain in my shoulder and my back, and it's been going on for months, and I haven't been able to get to the parlor. During the zikr, I got a transmission from the spirit, and he said that I needed to relax into him, and that this pain would go away. And so there was such clarity, and I felt like that was from the work we did.
Wonderful, yeah. Yeah.
I shared one with you the other night, but I guess I could share that again.
Yeah, I think that'd be wonderful. Thank you.
It was during the time you were saying that you might have some experiences or something. Mm. And you said it earlier, and then I hadn't had anything at that point, but towards the end, and there wasn't a time to share afterwards. Registering the meditation, I was feeling really good and feeling really centered in it. And as I was there, it's kind of like, you know, we look out on the world, that's my eyes are my windows and ears, you know, and things, that's how we perceive the world. And so it's like, you know, if you ever look through like a dirty window and you don't realize it's dirty because it's just been dirty, and so you don't think of it. And so it was kind of like I was doing that. And I didn't realize, but I guess it was like a visual thing, it's persisted, but it was like, maybe it was like some amount of snow, I won't say how much, because I don't know, on it, and a puff of wind hit it, just blew it all away. And I was like, real quick, wow, okay.
Yeah.
And I've been persisting in that, and so I think, you know, I was just thinking about it now.
Yeah.
It's more like I'm looking at, you, but kind of looking at the world, maybe as you see it too, not just the way I see you.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful poetical way of saying it. But it's pretty startling, isn't it? And you when you described it yesterday, you said that kind of clarity.
Yeah.
You know, those are moments that can even be talked about. They talk about those in sports medicine and stuff too. They're like these peak experiences where everything just becomes very heightened and very clear and very sharp. You know, it's a beautiful moment. Wow, we have lots of friends gathering. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Wow.
Would you prefer to sit on a bench or a seat? You're good? Okay. So I was asking the others that were, well, here on time, if they had anything they wanted to share. I know not all of you were here, by the way, but hopefully you'll benefit from the sharing. Anything to share that happened either yesterday or since that seems, or questions or experiences? I'm a little rough. Tell me where it hurts. Oh, there? Okay, that's where I'll push. I push there until it stops hurting.
Okay.
No pet cemetery, though, today. Right?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. It wasn't my fault. I didn't want to watch the movie in the first place, but it did help. Now, what I noticed is, you and I had a conversation yesterday about one of the names I could use. And then going to Zikr last night and using the various ones. Because for some reason I wasn't comfortable with going to Zikr. And you may have mentioned that Zikr I think that's you, I'm trying to remember. It's just okay to sit there. And it was great because I didn't join into the last dance and I had so many revelations that came big. And they've been very fast. And this morning, and yesterday morning I prayed for truth. But so when you pray for it, you better walk the trail. So I got it today, and, The thing is, I went to the spinning class and we used those, and we were walking and we were using hand motions. And it, for me, it makes it so much easier when I'm chanting, because I like chanting, but when we were chanting and putting them with the intention, also with the motion, and each one had each, because we've used two of them, I'll call them mantras or what, I don't know, what would you call them, just the names?
Mantras, okay, Wazifa, yeah, sacred names.
Wazifa.
Or Wazaif.
Wazaif, okay, thank you. Use one of those Wazaif. She would couple two of them, and each one had to together, and they would have two movements. And that, for me, was so clarifying and so less irritating, actually.
Good, good.
It's just, for me, it's like if I'm moving.
Body prayer. Body prayer. It's body prayer.
Yeah, if I'm moving and speaking and or singing at the same time, it makes it so much easier just sitting there.
Yeah, and that changes. Everything's impermanent, you know, that may change. Anyone else? I'm going to go on. Thank you. Yes.
Immediately, like within an hour, it feels that I was able to have some grief about something that I really needed to grieve.
Oh.
That I didn't even know was coming up.
Yeah, and that healing wisdom, yeah? And the exalter that we worked with, which we'll work with some today as well. So continuing with the Sufi Message, Volume 8, on health and order of body and mind, spiritual healing, the teachings of Hazrat Inayat Khan, he asks this question. What if the pain endured by all the great saviors and masters of humanity? What about that? Because we talked about certain pain, you know. And we sang about it last night again. You know, I mentioned it during class, and then we sang about the reed, longing. He says, we feel here that we're touching a most sacred mystery which words cannot express. But may we not reverently believe that? By taking to themselves the burden of pain of all the world, they transmuted it by the process of alchemy and sent it out as a fountain of love and power springing up from the everlasting life. And there are these stories, these great stories. One that's coming to mind is the one Ramana Maharshi. You know, he had a terrible cancer that was eating his arm. Yeah? You know this, Jasmine? And you know, just accepted that and looked at the arm with complete objectivity in the middle of excruciating pain and offered that suffering for all of humanity. And what an honorable path. I mean, very much like Jesus, and we're going to sing that beautiful prayer that Jesus gave us tonight in the Aramaic Lord's Prayer, but that the nobility of that. And I know, I just want to remind us that we're in the midst of that. There are two things you can cling to. All the great beings are with you, in whatever confusion or obscurations or suffering we may have. And the reminder, you're not alone in that suffering, that you can offer that up for your own, as Murshid says, the great transmuter, the great alchemist, you know. Turn to those masters. And here's the other thing. Everything, absolutely everything, is impermanent. And nothing lasts forever. And if we can remember that, we will neither cling to anything nor be too troubled by it. Because we know that if we just be present, it's going to change. It's going to change. And in the good times, you know, store it up so you have some reserve. So when the other times come, you have something in the storehouse. Because it's just the natural cycle of life. So let's work with this practice that we worked with yesterday. Ya-ra-fi. Ra-fi is the one that uplifts us, the one that can take us into an expression and an experience of exaltation that's beyond excitation, beyond sensation. It's an exalted state that I would say you enter a kind of unified experience. And it is also the thing that helps us overcome both within and without. It's almost like perhaps a shield, you might say, that protects us from ourselves and perhaps from any external things, which is also a paradox and almost silly to say, because really what's self and other and what's inner and outer, it's all part of the great oneness, the isness, the that-ness. But at any rate, we use these words in a conventional sense. But it is the divine name that helps us to overcome our own opinions, our own judgments, our own limitations, and perhaps those that are put upon us as well. How extraordinary is that? In this little word, little powerful word, Rafi. And you want to speak, you know, your name has that in it. Rafiq also has Rafi. You want to speak anything about that, Rafika? Any words of wisdom for us or revelations?
I've been having some as you speak.
Oh, okay, that's wonderful. That's good. The spirit of guidance. Ya Rafi, 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 Ya Rafi. Breathe out. taken in. Rafi, 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 just on the breath. Breathe in and out, feeling with each breath a feeling of being uplifted, uplifted, not only uplifted but held up into an exalted state. Imagine that you are standing before the throne of God in all its luminosity, awareness, clarity, love, power, and beauty. And then know this, that throne is in your heart. Now Murshid gets into the distinction between pain and disease. And he says this. However, while pain is one thing, disease is quite another thing. Disease must always be contrary to the divine will, with a capital W. It is our duty to combat it by every means in our power and to order our lives along the lines of sane, healthy living, obeying the laws of health in matters of diet, sanitation, and clothing. You know, Murshid was impeccably put together, always. I know I've told you the story, but Murshid Hidayat is telling it with greater and greater frequency as he grows, you know, he's 97 years old now. And he is, you know, this is a story that he's really just started talking about in the last few years. I'm speaking of the son of Hazrat Inayat Khan. And Hazrat Inayat Khan's on the left side of the altar, which he would like so much because he definitely vibrated a very feminine ray. And many of you know that when he left this earth, he left the message in the hands of four murshidas, not murshids, in the hands of women. But Murshid Hidayat talks about a story he remembers when he was a young boy, and they lived in what's now come to be known as Old Paris. And his father wanted to go to the city. And this little boy, who grew up to be Mirza Hidayat, was very protective of his father. And he couldn't imagine his father, who was so refined, sort of navigating the streets of Paris. So he insisted that he go with him and protect him. And it was a historic day, by the way, which I'll conclude with that part of the story as well, because I think it's significant for those that are here, whether or not they realize what I'm saying, they will. But so Murshid Hidayat, who was Little Hidayat, who, by the way, his father always called my little guru, very sweet, or sometimes my little brother, was holding the hand of his father. And if you know that, some of you may have seen the photo. It's still the family residence. It's still in the property of the family. But there's a beautiful stone multi-story building and a stone wall with a wooden gate. And so they opened the gate and they walked out onto the street. And on the street, there was a workman, a ditch digger. And it had been damp, so it was rather muddy in the streets. And it happened that also down the road a bit, there were some murids, some students of Hazrat and Icons that were, you know, probably, if they're like me, I can be such a groupie, you know, with such amazing devotion to my teachers that I, you know, would just probably stand day and night waiting to catch a glimpse of him. And so they were there, and they saw him walk to the workman that was in the ditch that was filthy, dirty, in mud, and take his hat off. He always wore like a kind of fez hat, which, by the way, his wife, Amina Begum, who was Mary Baker Eddy's, there's a connection there to Mary Baker Eddy. Her name was Aura Ray Baker. She would felt those hats for him and make his clothing. He always wore kind of a black cassock. And so he took his hat off and he extended the hand to the workman to greet him. You know, how do you do? And the workman just was almost paralyzed. He wasn't accustomed to someone even acknowledging him, not alone greeting him in such a beautiful human to human, heart-to-heart way. So then they proceeded down the street where the very proper murids in all their righteousness were waiting for him to say, well, Murshid, you shouldn't greet a workman like that. I mean, he was all dirty and, you know, I don't know, I guess they thought they were being protective. And, you know, Murshid Hidayat talks about that it was rather heartbreaking because, you know, his father had such presence and gave these beautiful teachings, and yet, you know, in some sense it hadn't penetrated the heart truly, because how could they say such a thing? And he said, in a rather heartbroken way, aren't we all the children of the same father, of the same one God? And that trip was to go to purchase bolts and bolts and bolts of gold color fabric. Look at the altar, look at the flag, look at these banners. And here's a very important thing that perhaps you all should note. There are Sufi organizations that indeed have come through the stream of Islam, but not all Sufi organizations have. So, when asked why the gold, he said, this message is a new impulse. We are leaving the past and moving towards a message in our time. And gold will be the color for that. Traditionally, it was green, and green is always associated with Islam. When you travel, all the mosques and the sacred schools have green tiles, and green is always a very prevalent color. It was a color that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, liked. And it's a significant color because you see, the nomadic tribes that wandered in the desert saw very little of it. So, Murshid was making a very poignant statement, was saying, we're leaving the past in the past, and this is a new impulse, and gold will be the Sufi flag from now on, the color of wisdom. And of course, if you read his papers, some of the first papers are about, this is not a religion. If it can be called anything, it's the religion of the heart. It comes from the word Thoth, which is, comes from Sophia, which means wisdom. Okay. Thank you for your patience, letting me tell you that story. But it relates to this because he was impeccable in his appearance, in his vibration, in his rhythm, in his routine. He understood very, very well that balance comes from rhythm. My grandmother, who we called Anne, some of you know about her, she always said, you don't get anywhere in this world without a well-worn rut. So yes, while the world of variety is very interesting and mesmerizing, routine and rhythm, rhythm of breath, rhythm of motion, regularity in one's day, rising at a similar time, eating at a certain time, sleeping at a certain time, dedicating time to practice, all of these can create balance and enhance and support our health and well-being. And he's referring to this here. Disease must always be contrary to the divine will. It is our duty, our dharma to combat it in every means in our outer power and to order our lives along the lines of saying. Interesting. Sane, healthy living, obeying the laws of health in matters of diet, sanitation, and clothing. It's very interesting because in a way this is almost like the law we hear in so many religious traditions, sort of these codified ways of living and practicing in terms of certain foods that we eat and certain practices. It's there, it's subtle, it's, you know, universal, but you hear it coming through in this language. He says, disease is largely the product of over-civilization or over-cultivation, right? What you were talking about with your sister. Some things come through too much intercession by man. That imposition on nature creates an imbalance and a disharmony. People of less highly evolved civilizations know how to keep themselves in health by simple nature remedies, such as herbs. And it is said that the North American Indian, when he comes home tired after a long day's hunting, will fling himself upon the ground, relax every sinew. Are you listening, Mary Lee? Just your message last night. Relax every sinew, every muscle, and draw into himself fresh stores of energy from the magnetic currents of the earth. So that after an hour's rest, he's ready to rise up and go forth again, if necessary, with renewed strength and vigor. among wild animals, in their natural state, there's very little disease. They die of old age, of accidents, or of attacks of enemies stronger than them. So Murshid's really pointing, you know, try to live a natural life. And, you know, maybe, you know, the tendency, I think, for us sometimes can be when we're tired, you know, we go for the caffeine or, you know, I don't know, all the things that we go for, you know, chocolate, food, you know. And I think there's I was talking with Jeannie today, and you were mentioning Deepak Chopra, and I remember he comes to Kansas City from time to time, and I mentioned he's coming in November. But one of the talks that I went to, it stuck with me, and I still do this. He says, when your body's telling you to do one thing and your mind's telling you to do the other, listen to your body. When your body's telling you to do one thing and your mind's telling you to do another, listen to your body. Natural. But you know, we have to be in a natural state to even know that. Yeah? And here's the other thing. I mean, you can probably tell. And if you know me a little bit, you know. I'm a pretty high-energy person. I really am on the path of mastery through accomplishment. It's very clear. And I expect a lot of myself. And I do sometimes push myself, knowing that I'm also going to lay down and relax every sinew and muscle of my body. I keep that before me. So sometimes there are times of, you know, intensity. We have to study, we have to work, we have to accomplish something. But we always must keep that balance somehow. So maybe we get that, those of us that are educators, we do it in the summertime so we can recharge our batteries to help those that study with us. And we have that to look forward to when we're working so hard. So make that part of your day. And you know, Murshid Samuel Lewis always said, and I think it's actually an icon that he was quoting, we could look that up, but he said, an hour of meditation is like a whole night's sleep. And then today I read from Murshid's teachings on meditation, the benefits of that. You don't remember, do you? Later I'll read it. It's on the here. It's okay. It's important to try to be really awake. Try to use whatever learning strategies you need to do. You know, you need to find out what kind of learner you are, so to speak. You know, are you audible? Are you visual? Are you tactile? And use those tools when you're in these classes to really pay attention. Not just mine, I'm talking about everything, everywhere, all the time. Be awake, not sleepy. This isn't necessarily about relaxation. It's about mystic relaxation. Any comments before we go on? Wow, okay, good. Well, I want to say one more thing about this whole thing about nature and what Murshid's talking about here in terms of Native Americans. There are, for example, KU Med Center. They are very well known for, a number of studies and sort of advanced studies in a number of fields of medicine, but they're well known in the field of oncology. And they have several innovative programs going on. Murshid talks about the natural herbs. They have a program of natural pharmacology in oncology where they're going out and into the Mojave Desert and they're gathering the medicinal plants and sort of codifying them and then doing testing. Because, you know, it is really all there. We've just kind of forgotten it, right? The cure is always right there. And I think that's really beautiful and gives me a lot of hope. Yes?
You had asked about a comment. Can I make a comment?
Of course.
You had talked about health in the body, and this is something that I had mentioned in another group today, and so it's interesting that it comes up again. And I know in our prayers we talk about the denseness of the earth and that we're in our human bodies, but for me, at some level, the body is like a temple of truth, because my body doesn't lie to me, and my entirety tells me when I need to release waste, it does that. My emotional body will hold on to waste for years, a whole lifetime, but my physical body, it's if I could be as truthful as my physical body is, it would be so much better. It's like, it's an example I just overlook all the time, the truth of the body. And yet it's not this just thing that we're stuck in. There's a reason, perhaps, why we're in a body. That there is a reason, a truth that we're experiencing in just the structure, let alone where it takes us.
So with that, let's do the external zikr of Anayat Khan, which is, this is not my body, this is the temple of God. This is not my body, this is the temple of God. This is not my body, this is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. This is not my body. This is the temple of God. One could also say, although Mersha didn't give it this way, this is my body, this is the temple of God. But, I want you to know that he always began the zikr by doing this repetition of the phrase. And he also, before universal worship, with the Shiraghs, also performed this. You see, it's attunement. You understand what I'm saying? So with this idea of health and balance, divine health and divine balance. And again, I want to assure you that I don't see disease necessarily as a shortcoming, but I can see that it is sometimes the outcome of environment, thoughts, karmic conditions, maybe even some would say genetics, which I think is also part of the karmic condition. And, you know, we're all going to succumb to something. So there's no shame. It's part of a continuum. Everything is impermanent, including this body. I don't think my mother would mind if I brought her into this, but, you know, my mom is very, very youthful. She's kind of like Peter Pan. You know, she's not going to grow up. And inside, I know she still sees herself, as I think many of us do, quite young. And I see her struggle with the infirmities of the body. And we've talked about it very candidly, that it's almost like she feels betrayed because the body's no longer functioning or able to do the things that it was once able to do. But there is a beauty to that too. There can be a kind of surrender and understanding that the equipment is just wearing out. But there's something eternal that will go on and on, although in another form. And so I wanted to work with a practice that kind of emphasizes this. And the practice is Yahai Yahakayum. Yahai Yahakayum. Yahai. First, let me just pronounce it and say it. It's spelled H-A-Y-Y, but it's pronounced like hi. I love it when people say hi. I always turn it into, oh, everlasting life. I hear that when people say hi. And Kayum is, if you were to spell it phonetically, you would spell it with a K, but you would all, it's actually spelled in English Q-A-Y-Y-U-M, Kayum. And if you'll allow me, I'd like to read from Physicians of the Heart. If you don't have a copy, you might want to find one, because it's a wonderful text. And, you know, Wally Ali was in retreat with him a few weeks back, and he was talking about that this book is a kind of door opener, and hopefully it'll be, the understanding that's come through in that text shouldn't just stop there, that hopefully that is a vehicle that will be perpetuated through other projects and other understandings. But this is from this text, and I think it's beautifully stated. Traditional Sufism focuses on the phrase Yahai Yahakayum to describe the whole glorious family of all the names that direct us towards the infinite and the eternal. It is an enormous and important wazifa. Yahai is the life that is beyond the cycle of life and death as we know it. It is what everyone is longing for. Yahai expresses the ever-living, the always-living. What is called the cycle of life and death fades away into that reality. Discovering it enables you to deal with the experience of loss, and what remains is al-baqi. Baqi is, it's like resurrection. It's like the fauna and baka. We've heard that, some of us that have been studying for a while. So baki and baka are related. So it's the annihilation and then the resurrection, the ultimate surrender and then the upliftment. The other attribute of this famous pair is the sacred name of Al-Kayum. Al meaning the, that's part of the language. So Kayum, Al-Kayum. The root means to stand instead of falling down or falling apart. The similarity with al-baqi, that which remains, is unmistakable. The sound cold makes it a continuous activity due to the double consonant sound. According to Ibn Arabi, the formulation of the sound Al-Kayum shows that it continuously, without a single break, bestows existence to everything. He says that the very fact that everything else exists, including being itself, is because the nature of Al-Qayyum, which is beyond the passage of time. It's so beautiful, isn't it? It's just a beautiful... I hope you can feel that. So, things come, things go. We know that. Things come, things go. They're forming and emptying constantly. That's fauna. But Al-Qayyum says they continually exist even after death in God. So the flow of existence beyond created and uncreated being is in kun. Kun is K-U-N, which is, and it means be. Be, capital B. And this is continually bestowed upon us in Qayyum. Be. Shall we do it? Okay. Yahai, O ever living, ever existing life, and Qayyum, existing on a continuous filling and emptying, ever creating. Now, this is also a beautiful thing to know. Sometimes, at the end of these wazifas, we put the sound, oh. So we've heard this practice, Yahayo, Yahayum. Yahayo, it kind of extends the vibration, the oh. It's like, om. Okay. Yahayo, Yahayum. 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 We breathe in, high, out, Kayu. High, 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 Kayu. enter the breath, vibration. Hi, Caillou. A few more words from Physicians of the Heart on Caillou. Things go up, things go down. Things are built and things fall apart. People fall in love, people fall out of love. People are healthy, they're not healthy. People are happy, people are sad. People are prosperous, people are not. It's all part of that. I've added a few extra words there, by the way. Things go up, things go down. Things are built, things fall apart. But even so, the essential existence of a thing is maintained through Qayyum. This divine quality keeps things going even when you can't perceive continued existence. The 99 names of Allah, the 99 names of God, are designed to break through the barriers of the mind, to reach the source and know the nature of the source. Yet at the same time, they also describe the attributes of the absolute. There is a dynamism in them. Each name plays at two levels. The level of describing the nature of the absolute puts the mind into cessation to experience that reality. But we can take Al-Qayyum, for example, also as a process that the personality can go through daily. So for those of us in this circle, you know what I'm talking about, the people that are working with me in practice. I think these practices are things that we should take up now, perhaps until we meet again. What do you think? We kind of can keep it going. And those of you that are here and, you know, don't let this interfere with your own personal practice assigned by a guide. But if you feel called, perhaps consult with the guide. I really want to emphasize so much that the Physicians of the Heart isn't meant for self-prescription. In fact, it's rather dangerous. There have been people that have told me so much so that you're right about that. I tried, and it was like, you know, I make the analogy of going to the medicine cabinet or to the pharmacy and just grab, oh, that sounds good. Oh, yeah, I can, yeah, I think that'll help. It's it can be an unwise alchemy. I mean, work with some supervision and some, you know, discretion and discrimination in the ultimate sense of that.
But when we're chanting, like, with the group and they have some things that they practice, is that different?
Yes. I think I'm reaching the last words of Murshid, which are so special. Every word is, I think, of his. We in the West have lost the knowledge of the use of simple nature remedies, and there's scarcely a one who really knows how to relax. I really want you to practice this, okay? When you lay in bed at night, even, and you know, sometimes they do that like in exercise classes. I find it helpful. Maybe if you can't, you know, there is a point where you actually can feel kind of the big ah, and everything kind of goes limp. It's so important to do that. It's so important to do that. If you feel you can't do it, then first do everything like make yourself really, really stiff and then relax. Sometimes, you know, they do that in yoga or different classes. Yeah, so try that and then just keep breathing and offering greater ease and relaxation to yourself, your body, your heart and mind. The Mother Mir of Sri Aurobindo Ashram, in her writings, talked about this. She made the analogy to just a limp rag to try to get very, you know, limp before you go to sleep in a very relaxed state. Okay, so really try that. And Murshid, of course, is saying that here, that scarcely one who really knows how to relax. We should do well to try to get back to this lost knowledge, for health is more likely to be gained in this way than by the use of drugs or the surgeon's knife. And at the same time, we know that's a great gift and a great blessing. The traditional medicine has its gifts too. And I always think about that, you know, at a personal level, and certainly what family members have gone through, you know, that those are, that is the knowledge, and that is the hands of, those are the hands of God as well. And that disease sometimes can be a great teacher, and as Murshid said yesterday, can point the finger to where we, our work is to be done. And remember Ramana Maharshi, he had cancer. He was a great realized being. I also know lamas that have been suffering in hospitals, and you know, they're, you know, they can relax them and take the pain away, and they say, no, I want to be awake in this experience. I want to transmute this suffering for the benefit of all beings. So there's no, there's nothing anyone's doing wrong if one's sick or gets some sort of disease. You might think of it as a very high practice. I want to make that very clear. I don't want people to think there should be no shame in that. It can be a beautiful path as well. But Murshid's giving us some guidelines here. Man is the microcosm of the macrocosm. Every substance in the earth is to be found in the body of man, even to the lately discovered radium. Therefore, it is in this very true sense that we speak of Mother Earth. And the closer we live to nature, our great mother, and the simpler we make our manner of living, the healthier we shall surely become. It has been said that we grow into the likeness of that which we habitually contemplate. Yeah, there's a quote, I think, from the Gathikas. Murshid Wali Ali was quoting it recently. Something like, the master is the one who is skilled in concentration. The master is the one that is skilled in concentration. It has been said that we grow into the likeness of that which we habitually contemplate. Therefore, constant and habitual contemplation of the perfect ideal dwelling in thought upon the attributes of divine beauty, not in the conventional sense, but in the sense of developing this, these ornaments, these precious jewels of one's own character that allows the rays of the divine to manifest through you. That kind of beauty, a naturalness in that sense. Just be who you are, who you're really supposed to be. Keeping the heart tuned to the note of love and harmony, and making this practice of daily life, the mind still and calm, the heart pure and open, so that it can reflect the perfect will. This should be the aim of life of the one who aspires to serve humanity as a spiritual healer. Does anyone want to hear that again?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do want to remind you, and I'm going to assume I have your permission, we record everything. We put them online. If you are not on the e-list, please talk with Karima Gita. She can make sure you are notified when these go online. And there's things from years and years, audio teachings from these camps, the classes that we do in Kansas City, and here we're doing just audio, but in Kansas City, I think as of 2012, we started doing them audio and video, so they're both there, so you can download MP3s. We're so pure shop to call it, calls me the digital Mershita. But it's catching on, believe me, the rest of them are using those tools, so everybody's kind of caught it. The profound thing about the technology is that everything can be used for absolute destruction and harm, and everything can be used to enlighten. And so this is the remarkable thing of technology, and I think our new brother in the circle, Ramat, won't mind me telling this, but, you know, here is a person that found us through Facebook, entered the stream through the website, started personal communication some months ago. A person of, you know, well-educated, serving his community in the forestry department in South India, comes from a traditional Muslim background, and is looking for something of a more universal nature. He's in a country where there's a guru on every corner, and where Sufis also abound, but in a very traditional manner. And he's reached out to us. And those of you that have been following the dialogue can feel that. He feels us, we feel him. And, you know, there's no distance, there's no time, there's no separation. But there are people that are searching, and we can be there for them. So those that are on that circle, that Nereid's list, take the time to read and respond. A little notes, it means so much to people. Even birthday reminders. So here's Murshid's closing statement. It is said that we grow into the likeness of that which we habitually contemplate. Therefore, constant and habitual contemplation of the perfect ideal, whatever that is, you have to create your own ideal. Well, you have to create it, and then you also have to destroy it, because that too is a limitation. But he says, therefore, constant and habitual contemplation of the perfect ideal, dwelling in the thought upon the attributes of divine beauty, keeping the heart tuned to the note of love and harmony, there's the invocation, and making this the practice of daily life, the mind still and calm, the heart pure and open, so that it can reflect the perfect will. This should be the aim of life of the one who aspires to serve humanity as a spiritual healer. And you can all do this in every day, in every little way. It doesn't require a podium. It doesn't require a class. It doesn't require a title. We just do that for each other. And I love the little story of Johnny the grocery sacker. Do you know that story? Shall I tell it?
Yes.
Okay. So, and it's cute. I think there's a little, like a video or something online about it. You can look him up. But he was this young man that worked at a grocery store. And the management sort of challenged each employee to kind of make the shopping experience meaningful and enhance some way to make people feel at home and that they were part of a community and et cetera, et cetera. Well, this young man, Johnny, he, you know, we might say was gifted, but he was gifted with some handicaps and he had limitations of sorts, but, you know, in another way, those were great gifts. So he thought to himself, you know, I don't really know what I could do. You know, I'm just kind of this ordinary person that puts bags and, you know, groceries in people's bags. And then he got really inspired. And he thought, oh, I could, every time someone comes, I could have a little inspirational quote, like on a piece of paper. And I could put it in there. That they'll find it, you know, like this little gift, this little inspiration. And so he asked his father, you know, he worked with his father, and he made these selections of these quotes that he thought were inspirational or humorous. You know, they typed them up, and they printed them out, and they cut the pieces of paper, and he kept them kind of in his little apron, and he just sort of discreetly, well, pretty soon they figured out who was doing it. And the grocery line, you know, it's almost like they had traffic cops because everyone came to see what their next quote was going to be. So, you know, this was like just such a beautiful reminder to us that you just do it here, you just do it now, you just do it where you are. And then the other thing about the stillness and the calm of the mind, the world is constantly drawing us. The thing is those conditions sometimes do exist. I mean, you know, they talk about that in Buddhism, sort of preparing the meditation space and the cushion and the ideal setting. But rarely does it exist. It might occasionally, but even then, my goodness, you know, even Milarepa, you know, he had all those little demons, you know, talking, you know, the mind. But the point is to create that even in the midst of it all. You know, how do you find that equipoise and stillness in the midst of it all? And you know what? We're given a lot of opportunities that we forget. When we're impatient in the grocery store line, good opportunity. When we're stuck in traffic, good opportunity. Transform it.
Something you said a couple times, you repeated it, and I like it, that we contemplate on, we become like. The opposite side of that, the negative side, is I've heard people say it's pick your enemies well because we become like them. So if we're contemplating on somebody we dislike, we end up gaining those qualities. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, and then it comes back to what you're saying at the end, is that in each moment we have to choose, do we choose the light or dwell on the negative? I see that a lot here in the camp, of people choosing the light.
Sure. Hopefully. But you know, those things that really, it's just so clear, we have to bless. Here's a great teaching that my Tibetan Buddhist master, Khamtul Rinpoche, gave me. When he taught me the refuge with prostrations, of which, you know, we think 101 times, try 1,001 times, full prostrations. Man, you get really strong and fit, I'll tell you. Great yoga and great all-over prayer. Talk about body prayer. It's body prayer. But he said, and some of you know this story, I'm sorry, you know, we're like old friends, like old married couples. I told Karina Gita we were coming down, and it's like, it's so nice we don't have to really talk. We're like an old married couple. We don't know each other's stories. We can just be quiet and comfortable together. So anyway, the point is that you know, Rinpoche gave this beautiful articulation of this visualization that you give and all the beings that you invoke and that you're the chant master for all of creation, beginningless time to end, ceaseless time. And he said, and before you, there are your enemies that you prostrate to, because they're the ones that give you the opportunity to practice the Dharma. And so when we find that contrary vibration, you might say, it's something that's connecting to us that we have to look at too. And we should be thankful for that, I think. Well, or we can be thankful for that.
The same thing is if somebody really offends you, you should thank them because they really, you can't offend me unless there's something that I have a weakness there.
Absolutely, that's exactly the point. Exactly the point, yes. Thank you for saying it that way.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing. Gandhi always said, conquer your enemies. I would say that would be your inner and outer enemies with love. I know. Babaji used to say, Baba Ninkroli used to tell Ram Dass tells that story. So he would always say, love everyone, feed everyone. And Ram Dass would say, Babaji, I just don't like them. I don't like some of those people. You know, they'd be in the ashram together, you know, rubbing against each other. And he'd say, Ram Dass, love everyone, serve everyone. It's not a personal love. It's beyond attraction and repulsion. It is a field of radiance that transcends the personal. And here's the other secret. I should turn this off, but I don't know that we have to like everyone, but we do need to love everyone. You know? That's just the way it is. It's kind of a personal thing, and you know, pray to get over it, but it's there, and sort of acknowledging that's okay too. It's being real.
You don't have to agree with behavior. I mean, you can love a person even though you think that behavior is maybe misguided or not best place.
But I assure you, if you radiate love, you'll see it transforms everything. Okay. And you have to give that without a feeling of a desire that someone's going to accept that love. They might slap you, or spit in your face, or slander you, or whatever. It doesn't matter.
What about the feeling that I love myself? I'm better than you are. The pride of
It's just, you know, we want to surrender all that. You know. And just be really. It's not.
Yeah.
Well, that's love too. It's on the road to the great life. Oh, God.
Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness, teach us thy loving.